Radio Network. This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Criminal prosecutors at the Justice Department and top FBI officials have privately criticized Attorney General John Ashcroft for failing to recuse himself or appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the leak of a CIA operative's identity. The criticism reflects the first sign of dissension in the department and the FBI as the inquiry nears a critical phase. The Attorney General must decide whether to convene a grand jury, which could compel White House officials to testify. Mr. Ashcroft and Alberto Gonzalez, White House counsel, have also been under fire for their initial handling of the case. The Justice Department allowed the White House to wait overnight on September 28th before sending notification ordering White House employees not to destroy records related to the link. A remote-controlled bomb tore apart an armored vehicle in a U.S. diplomatic convoy Wednesday, killing three American security guards and wounding a fourth in an unprecedented attack on a U.S. target in the Palestinian territories. The attack on a convoy of diplomats entering Gaza was a dramatic departure from typical militant operations, which usually target Israeli soldiers and civilians. It was almost certain to lead to greater U.S. pressure for a Palestinian crackdown on militant groups. President Bush leaned on senators to back his call for nearly $87 billion in reconstruction and military aid to Iraq and Afghanistan, even as some Republicans attempt to make Iraq repay part of the money. The White House has launched a vigorous lobbying effort to kill loan proposals as the Senate and House get ready to vote on a huge spending measure this week. The administration says a loan would burden Iraq with too much additional debt. But Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine said she did not want U.S. taxpayers saddled with the cost of rebuilding Iraq when the U.S. economy is still fragile. Labor unrest spread in California on Wednesday as bus drivers walked out in solidarity with striking transit workers. 70,000 grocery clerks from three chains spent their fourth day on picket lines, and nearly half of L.A. County Sheriff's deputies called in sick Wednesday. More IE America Network news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A wayward deer entered a clothing store in Linden, New Jersey, and wandered around for more than an hour on Monday before it was shot with a tranquilizer dart by police. The full-grown antlered buck was expected to be returned to the woods once the tranquilizers wore off. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The rabid partisans of the Republican far right truly loathe Senator Paul Wellstone, the spirited and popular Minnesota progressive who died in a plane crash last year. In a testament to their partisan loathing, Minnesota right-wingers have put out an ugly post-mortem bumper sticker that angrily says of Wellstone, "He's dead! Get over it!" But Paul, or at least his spirit, just won't die. Indeed, Paul and his wife Sheila, who also died in the crash, are now the rallying point of an important and exciting organizing effort to carry their spirit and policies into a long-term campaign to build a progressive future for our country. It's called Wellstone Action, and it literally is taking action to bring power back to America's grassroots. Among modern political figures, Wellstone was unique, for instead of throwing all of his campaign funds at pollsters, consultants, and TV ads, he put a big percentage into grassroots organizing. He and his staffers ran a series of weekend political boot camps called Camp Wellstone, where they trained thousands of volunteers, campaign managers, and future candidates. By strengthening the civic skills of on-the-ground people, Paul strengthened his own populist base, enhanced democracy, and extended the framework for an ongoing progressive movement. Now, the good people who worked with Paul and Sheila are continuing this democracy-building effort by taking the Camp Wellstone concept national. Wellstone Action is holding 9 or so intensive training camps this year in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, with about 20 Camp Wellstones planned cross-country next year. If they build it, people will come, for folks are thirsting for community and a politics that matters, and this is one political effort that genuinely puts people first. This is Jim Hightower saying, to connect to Camp Wellstone, call 651-645-3939.
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live on the Internet from radiopower.org, one of the finest Internet radio stations. They're also listener-sponsored. I encourage you to check out their site and help them out. Also broadcasting live on radio stations across the nation and also from the Sirius satellite radio system beaming down from the depths of outer space. Today we've got a lot of interesting stuff. We're going to get into what is the impact of immigrant labor on democracy? What is this whole... There's several pieces of legislation going on. This thing is becoming very politicized. The Democrats are trying to figure out how to handle it. You've got both liberals and conservatives, progressives, people talking schizophrenically. And I'd like to talk some truth about this issue. Let's just, you know, lay some of this stuff out and get into this. There's a pile of things in the news today that we're going to get into in our second hour. All of the conservative distortions, misrepresentations, lies. It's extraordinary. And in our third hour, we're going to ask, what are the connections between the Bushes and Cuba? And we're going to have an author on who has a new book out about Cuba and Castro and all this sort of thing. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. If you'd like to drop into our chat room today, go to TomHartman.com or LiberalTalkRadio.com. If you'd like to answer the question of it's turning into the question of the week here, should Rush Limbaugh go to jail? You can find that at www.ieamericaradio.com, and you may vote yes or no. So far, it's not looking so good for Rush. We may hear from him in the second hour. We'll see. Or from somebody who sounds startlingly like him. So to this topic. Oh, and our quote for the day from General Douglas MacArthur on the 2nd of September, 1945. General MacArthur said, "We have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door." And that greater and more equitable system is what is at the core of this program. What you find is that historically, the position that has been taken, and I'm actually researching this right now for a book I'm writing about the history of democracy, but there have been many people who have suggested
that no democracy in history has ever gone to war with another democracy. Now, the problem is how you define democracy, but it looks like, even with the almost the broadest definition, that it's true. And so the greater and more equitable system that would answer MacArthur's concern would be democracy. Now, what is democracy? If we look back at what the founders had in mind and how American democracy has evolved over the past 227 years, we find that there is this balance, this very delicate but very appropriate balance between, on the one hand, freedom of the individual, and on the other hand, freedom of the society. That is, the ability of us to live our individual lives however we want, and the ability for us to live in and as part of a larger and non-dysfunctional, but functional and helpful and useful society and culture. It's not a trade-off between freedom on the one hand and slavery on the other, as the cons would have you think. It's the freedom of society and the freedom of the individual. And then when you look at the two economic forces that have traditionally competed, those that own capital, corporations, and those who work, labor, democracy has functional democracies, modern liberal democracies around the world that are the most functional and the most free and the least likely to arbitrarily go to war with somebody else, are those where there is a healthy and equitable balance between the interests of labor and capital or ownership or management, where labor unions are strong and intact, and where there is freedom to engage in economic opportunity. So into this realm comes this issue of immigration. Financial Times 2 days ago reported, and here's this is kind of the Iraq side of it, and we'll get that out of the way and then go on to the United States and primarily immigrants from the South. But U.S. subcontractors, I'm quoting from the Financial Times on October 14th, article by Nicholas Pelham, contractors in Iraq accused of importing labor and exporting profit. Say what? It turns out that all those billions that were given Bechtel and Halliburton and all those companies and we're saying all these high words about, you know, well, you know, we're going to hire Americans with this money, or yeah, we're going to be hiring and bringing in Iraqis. You've got 7 million Iraqis who are out of work right now. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's 6 out of 10 Iraqis. It's a 3 out of 5. 60% of Iraq is unemployed, of the potentially employable Iraqis. And it turns out that the companies that we are giving the contracts to are doing what companies so often do in the absence of that delicate balance that I was talking about, that you have in a society that really does care about democracy, rather than an aristocracy that cares only about the wealthy top. That these contractors and subcontractors are bringing in foreign labor. Here we've got a situation, they cite one company. They actually, a number of the businesses based in Saudi Arabia and Gulf states that have contracts to supply the U.S. Army are wary of employing indigenous labor. In other words, they don't want to hire Iraqis. They want to bring in their own people. Or they want to bring in cheaper labor than even Iraqis. They give the example of one company, it is the Tamimi Company, which is based in the Saudi city of Dammam, which is contracted to cater for 60,000 American soldiers in Iraq. Okay, the company, which has 12 years' experience feeding U.S. troops in the Gulf, employs 1,800 Pakistanis, Indians, Bangladeshis, and Nepalese in its kitchens. It uses only a few dozen Iraqis for cleaning. So we have a situation where the Iraqis And for that matter, you know, potentially Americans. I mean, there's probably a few unemployed Americans who would love to go over to Iraq if they could. Are saying, nah, don't think so. The employers are saying, no, I don't think so. Now, in the midst of this, we have this situation where Ms. Wicochea, Juliana Wicochea, a 15-year-old high school student, I'm sorry, an 18-year-old high school student from Phoenix, Arizona, whose parents brought her to the United States illegally at the age of 4. She's now 18. She's in a Phoenix high school, is about to graduate. Her class builds a 15-foot solar-powered boat, and they take it to Buffalo, New York, to enter it in a fair, in kind of a science contest thing. And with a bunch of friends from her high school science team, they decide, hey, let's go to Buffalo, New York. Let's go to the Niagara Falls. And so they go across the border over to the Canadian side of the falls, because that's where the really cool view of the falls is. And then they try to come back into the United States, and the U.S. immigration officials nail her. She's not an American citizen. She wasn't born here. They're not going to let her back. Now, this is the example that the New York Times uses to open their story about this issue. Congress looks to grant legal status to immigrants by Steve Greenhouse earlier this week. And they go through all these different bills that are being laid out right now. With many members of Congress thinking about next year's elections and paying increasing attention to the concerns of Hispanics, the issue is gaining bipartisan interest on Capitol Hill, says the New York Times. The issue being legalizing immigration, or legalizing, rather, the immigrants who are here right now illegally. We also have this whole issue in California of driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. What Gray Davis just signed. We'll get to that in a minute. We have a new bill here that Orrin Hatch has sponsored, the Utah Republican. His bill, the Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors, the acronym is DREAM, DREAM Act, has 36 sponsors, a third of them Republican. Looks like it's going to get out of committee this week. The bill, the New York Times says, is part of a wave of immigration legislation, including one bill that would accelerate citizenship to immigrants who serve in the armed forces. So you can join the army right now, even if you're an illegal immigrant, apparently. Maybe if you're just an immigrant, probably not illegal. Another would grant legal status to 500,000 farm workers if they commit themselves to doing agricultural work for several more years. And this gets to the key of what I want to talk about today. And that is, are we basically perpetuating slavery in the United States by our immigration policies? What kind of society do we want to be living in? And how long is this going to last? What is the future going to be? Cesar Chavez brilliantly made an observation about this before he died. He said, for some reason my player here is not playing what he said. Ah, here we go. Cesar Chavez.
Once social change begins, it cannot be reversed. You cannot uneducate the person who has learned to read. You cannot humiliate the person who feels pride. You cannot oppress the people who are not afraid anymore.
Right. So we have the situation now where immigration is becoming a hot topic. It's becoming a very hot topic. And, you know, some folks, for example, San Francisco State Representative Rico Aller, are arguing against allowing immigrants to have driver's licenses. Others are arguing in favor. We're going to hear from him in just a minute, right after this break. Others are arguing in favor. I want to share with you a story right after this break that actually from Dennis Weaver, his book All the World's a Stage, about his experience in the 1930s as a migrant farm worker. When he was a teenager with his family, traveling around California and Oregon picking strawberries and peaches. And what is the history of America? What does immigration mean? What should we be doing about this? How do we want our society to work? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
Get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
So you've graduated from college, got a new job, a new place to live, even a new dog, but you're still paying the same old high-interest student loans. Well, we can help. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE, anytime, 24/7. We're College Loan Corporation, and we're dedicated to helping you refinance your college loans with interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest rates in nearly 40 years. Get on with your new life and call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the charts.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Stephan should be on all day, 24/7. Yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by liquidity, will, and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Bosses of the world, unite. Let us save the day. Malcontents without 5 cents want us to cut our pay. We only make 500 times as much as our average worker drones. We work just as hard and we too sometimes need to paint our our homes. The pressures are incredible and no one seems to care. We moved our plants to Haiti and now we have to move from there. They're clamoring for more than a dollar a day from Malaysia to Mexico. At that rate, pretty soon there'll be no place for us to go.
Yes, Bosses of the World Unite. That's from Jim Turr at BlueCanyonProductions.com. Jim, one of our great creative geniuses of this era. And today is National Bosses Day. Perhaps an appropriate juxtaposition here. 8.5 million illegal immigrants are in the United States. They make up 13% of our nation's workers. Illegal immigrants. 13% of our nation's workforce. This is the highest percentage since the 1930s. And here's a couple of interesting facts that really frame this thing. In the last 13 years, basically since 1990, we have had more people come into the United States as immigrants, legal and illegal, than during any 13-year period in the history of the United States. In fact, during the Great Depression, there was actually a negative flow of immigrants. We had people leaving the United States. Now, Reverend James Lawson is part of this Freedom Riders group. They're driving around the original Civil Rights Freedom Riders routes in the South, drawing attention to the immigration issue, claiming that it's not just about economic issues, that there's also the issue of race here. Here's Reverend Lawson.
May I simply remind you that the anti-immigrant feeling in the United States is a direct product of the 375 years of racism in America. You must understand that.
And I think that he's right to some extent. I think that there is an issue, there is an element of racism in there, but that's not really the biggest issue. Frankly, I think the biggest issue is economic, pure and simple. It's a good friend of mine had a home in Los Angeles that he had bought back in the late 50s, and for some relatively small amount of money, what was then a lot of money, but $40,000-$50,000. But it was up in the Hollywood Hills. It overlooked the canyon. It overlooked the whole, it was just beautiful. And they had built it out, and they had this incredible view. And it was just breathtaking what you could see from there. And ultimately became worth millions, this home. And I remember one day I was visiting, and the pool guy was there. The pool guy, Jorge. And he didn't speak any English. He was an illegal immigrant who was working, who came over every week and worked on the pool and, put in a half a day's work for, 10, 15 bucks, something like that? Not a great deal of money. This was maybe a decade ago. But the point is that all over California, and it's not just California. When I lived in Atlanta, on the street corners and up in the northern suburbs where we lived, there were certain street corners you could drive by in the morning and there would be a large collection of people, mostly clearly from south of the American border, who were just standing there waiting, and trucks would come along and load up, half a dozen of these guys and take them off to work on construction sites. Day laborers. And because of their illegal status, they didn't have the protection of unions. They didn't have the protection even of the labor laws in the United States. They couldn't defend themselves if they were abused by their employers. And this is a situation that I'm suggesting the conservatives in this country embrace and want to perpetuate. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con in conservatives. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Some subway cars follow a route to the bottom of the sea, and the new riders are fish and mollusks. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Tiny sea creatures and fish make homes on rocks and reefs, and people sometimes try to help them out by sinking other things that will serve the same purpose. Old ships and subway cars are just a few kinds of scrap that people deliberately put out to sea to make new homes for marine life. Bill Muir is a national expert on marine pollution with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. He says people once tried to make artificial reefs out of some questionable material. Things like refrigerators ended up damaging natural reefs and not helping the marine life. The government now has guidelines to be sure people treat the seabed as a resource instead of a dump. Muir has led programs to clean and sink things like retired army tanks and subway cars. He says they can create a reef that will attract sea plants and grazing fish.
The fish are actually grazing on it as you would have in a wooded environment where you might have the deer grazing on the nearby foliage in a woods.
Earlier this year, the state of New Jersey started a project to sink as many as 250 old subway cars from New York off its shores. Prior to the sinking, the cars are stripped of all plastic, degradable materials, and grease to avoid contamination of the marine ecosystem. Muir says sunken subway cars often become homes for mussels. Mussels feed by filtering organic material out of the water, and Muir says the mussel beds sometimes improve water quality and clarity at the same time. Muir says artificial reef programs like this are common around the world. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I know it's my duty to spend and to buy, to prove to Bin Laden I'll shop till I die. I'm a world-class consumer, I'm sure of my role. I vote with my dollars for corporate control. I'll prove that I'm loyal and rush to the store, where spending is my contribution to war. And the American flag's on the counter for sale. We're all made in China by prisoners in jail. I know what's happening, cause I watch TV, where talking head experts report facts to me. Thank God they present only one point of view, so I don't have to wonder whose story is true. I'll prove that I'm loyal and rush to the mall.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Here we've got this Craig Kennedy bill. But before I get into it, let me just, I wanted to share with you a couple of quick things, some observations from some of the folks in our chat room that I think are just brilliant. Examine Reality says, it's funny, every time I think of all the progress I've made, quote, all by myself, end quote, something comes up to remind me that not everyone has the same opportunities. Tom's topic is pretty sobering today. And then Coach says, points out, you know, men make more. And let's see, there was another note in here. Anyhow, it was an excellent discussion there. And we have, outside our house, we've got an area that leads up to the driveway that is paved with flagstone. And we had a fellow, a friend of ours, actually, who does stonework, come out and put it in a couple, I don't know, 2 years ago or so. And he said, you know, it's really interesting. He said these stones were cut 150 or more years ago and never used. They were from a quarry where they were cut and they were seconds. They were not the ones that got sold. So they're kind of, you know, they're not all the same shape and size. He said these were cut by indentured Welshmen and Irishmen. They'd come over to the United States on a 7-year indenture, which typically 7 years was the most common. Sometimes it ran to as much as 15 years. Sometimes it was as little as 2 or 3 years. But typically it was 7 years. And, you know, it would go longer if you wanted to bring your family with you and things like that. And basically, you would, in exchange for passage to the United States, you'd give 7 years of slave labor. Keep in mind the history of American immigration policy. In 1875, following the Civil War, the Supreme Court declared the regulation of immigration a federal responsibility. I mean, it was 1875 that the Supreme Court first decided that the United States should regulate immigration. In 1891, the Immigration Service was established, in part in response to a large wave of immigration in the 1800s. After World War II, we saw a decrease in European immigration during World War I, but it really picked up after the war. That's when my grandparents on my father's side from Norway came over. It was right around World War I. And in the 1920s, in response to the wave of immigrants coming to the United States, the Ku Klux Klan gained its largest membership ever and became mainstream as a reaction against immigration. In 1921, we established a national quota system and based on U.S. Census figures. In 1924, we started the Border Patrol within the Immigration Service. During the 30s, immigration actually went into negative numbers, as I mentioned before. We were actually losing more people than we were gaining. And it remained low right up until World War II. And then in 1952, Congress combined all previous immigration law and recodified it into the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1952. And you know, since then, we've had this system. And in the 1990s, immigration met or surpassed the previous immigration record, which was set between 1901 and 1910. The 1990s was the greatest period of immigration in American history. And I told you I was going to share a little bit of Dennis Weaver with you. Dennis Weaver wrote this book called All the World's a Stage, which is his autobiography. And I was very pleased when he asked me if I would write a foreword for it, which I did. Dennis and his wife, Jerry, are just remarkable people. When we started a community for abused kids back in the late 70s in New Hampshire, Dennis and his family did a benefit concert for us at a trade conference, at a trade association meeting, as a fundraiser. And he signed fundraising letters, and you know, we've been friends for 25 years. And remarkable fellow. And he's talking about his years. He was young. I don't remember the exact age. I'd have to read back into the book, but I think he was like 8 or 10 years old, something like that, in the 20s. And he says, the national economy was shredded due to the crash of 29, but in our area, he lived in North Texas, including parts of Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas, the problem was exacerbated by what was known as the Great Dust Bowl. And then he talks about, because of the Dust Bowl, our farm wasn't financially successful. His family had gone broke. Mom heard from neighbors who had fled the Dust Bowl and our devastated economy earlier that the strawberries were good in Oregon. There was money to be made just for picking. So we gave up on the farm, and they packed themselves into the family car. It was a 1928 DeSoto, and they drove out to Oregon. And there's several pages of really, you know, interesting stuff about the trip. And they finally made it to Oregon, and when they got there, he says, Mom unfastened the drawbridge door and opened up our cupboard, but the larder was beyond sparse. This was a mealtime we had planned to spend with our friends, and we would have, but had we not been sidetracked by car trouble. All the cupboard could offer was part of a loaf of bread, an almost empty jar of mustard, a quarter pound of lard, and a couple of tablespoons of sugar. Mom didn't skip a beat. You would have thought she was a waitress at the Ritz-Carlton. All right, children, what'll it be, mustard and sugar sandwich, or a lard and sugar sandwich? He says that his brother took the mustard and sugar, but he took the lard and sugar. They slept on the ground in bedrolls. And then he talks about working as an immigrant laborer. Working, he said, we didn't get paid by the hour. It was piecework. He says, on a good day, I could cut a box of peaches, about half a bushel, or lug, as they called it, of freestones in 20 minutes and collect 5 cents for my efforts. Yes, that was the going rate, 5 cents for freestones and 10 cents for clings. If I averaged a lug every 20 minutes, a pace I could not maintain, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that's 15 cents an hour. After 8 hours, my take-home pay was close to 75 cents a day. Now, that's not going to make you rich, but hey, it was better than a bread line, and it did wonders for my self-esteem. Speaking as a child, the entire family, his mother and all of his brothers and sisters, were out working as immigrant labor. And now we have this situation where under the Kennedy-Craig bill, immigrants, this now from the New York Times, immigrants who want legal status must show that they did farm work for 100 days over the past 18 months. They will then receive temporary residence status, but then they must still be farm workers. If they fail to do 360 days of farm work over the next 6 years, they will revert to illegal status. The bill would also reduce many bureaucratic barriers, the New York Times says, that make it hard for farmers to bring in seasonal guest workers from abroad. So you've got, you know, these two sides to this argument. On the one side, well, or there's kind of a schizophrenia to the argument. You've got the people who are saying, for example, as does California State Representative Rico Ehler, the Republican, no, we should not facilitate the aliens who are here.
It demeans and devalues the driver's license itself as a means of identification.
This is giving driver's licenses to illegal immigrants.
That is the number one document that's used for identification in California. So that poses a real set of problems, and it's a terrible thing to do, I think.
And so he's arguing that this is a dangerous thing because hey, you know, this is your ID. But on the other side, and people in states around the country or parts of the country where there's not a large immigrant workforce, I think a lot of people are scratching their heads, going, "What's going on in California? They've got millions of illegal aliens, and they want to give them driver's licenses." Well, the reason why is because those illegal aliens are driving the state's economy, and not just California. This is happening all across the United States, particularly in the big cities of America and in the agricultural regions. And here's Reverend James Lawson again saying that immigration is a civil rights issue.
These issues are connected. The Freedom Ride is not only about the rights of immigrant peoples in our land who work. The Freedom Ride is also about the rights of every man, woman, and child, every color, every creed, every complexion, the right for all of us to be here with full access to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's our task.
So the question then that gets set up is, number one, what should be done about all these illegal immigrants in the United States? And number two, what should we do about future ones who are coming in? The argument, basically, on one side, you've got folks who are saying, no, we have to let in all these illegal immigrants because without them, California agriculture would collapse, California sweatshops wouldn't work, you wouldn't have people to build buildings in Atlanta and Houston and Dallas and Salt Lake City. I mean, there's all this cheap labor. This is the cheap labor conservative argument. And then you've got people on the other side going, but wait a minute, they're illegal aliens. This is a security risk, or this just isn't right. And what people don't get is that the whole conservative agenda has at its core this idea of cheap labor. If you have people, you can exploit them. And I mean, this is the key, the core of the conservative agenda. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Armin in Florida has some thoughts on this. Armin, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Armin.
I know you like to stay on topic, and I know this is an issue that we need to deal with. The immigrant issue. Would you be offended if I asked you to discuss something that you were talking about yesterday?
You can bring it up.
Well, remember when you were talking, wasn't that Eisenhower, the old recordings you were playing?
Yeah, I played Eisenhower and Kennedy yesterday.
On the military complex?
Right.
And, you know, this is the question that I pose, if you don't mind me doing this, and if you do, I will make
it. If
an
I do, it's too late. Finish up, Armin.
Okay. Has there ever been a country in the history of the world that equal the United States for spending money on creating and arming enemies to later destroy and rebuild. In other words...
No, I got it. And a good question, Armin. I appreciate your call. Thank you. And I don't know the answer to it, so sorry. I want to get back to this immigration issue. This has become a politically charged issue. Bush in 2001 proposed granting legal status to 3 million illegal Mexican immigrants. Specifically, he had his meeting with Vicente Fox. Tom Daschle and Dick Gephardt decided, okay, you're going to play that game. We'll up the ante. And they said, let's grant legal status to all immigrants who are working and paying taxes in the United States. The Republicans are buying time. Well, actually, you've got conservative organizations buying up entire networks of Hispanic broadcasting networks, you know, Spanish language radio stations and networks, and you've got the Republicans running these ads on these Spanish language stations talking about, well, for example, the big flap right now is the Clean Air Act. The Environmental Protection Agency is running advertisements in Spanish on Spanish language radio stations talking about how George Bush's Clean Air Act, which will allow polluting industries and power plants to increase their emissions if they wish. All they have to do is swap emission credits with other companies. That this is going to make the air cleaner. And you know, it's open part. It's using a government agency and its resources, its taxpayer-funded resources, to promote a political agenda. It's against the law. And there's a minor flap about it, and you won't hear about it on phone news. Maybe you'll hear about it on CNN. We'll see. But it's out there. I mean, the story is starting to break. But the point is that the reaching out, pandering to the immigrant community has become an imperative politically, both for the conservatives, both for the Republicans and for the Democrats, let's say. And the question is how they're going to do it. My suggestion on this is that we need to raise our labor standards in the United States. We need to say, I'm sorry, you know, the reason why the agricultural industry is such a huge consumer of illegal immigrant labor is because they're unwilling to pay a living wage. And so, I mean, if you get people who are willing to sleep on the floor of a shack, then because there's, you know, it's better than what they left behind, then you can make more profit. And ultimately, and people say, well, wait a minute. If we were to pay a decent wage, then the price of food in the supermarkets would go up. Yeah, but not by very much. Labor is a really small percentage of the cost of agriculture. A very small percentage of the cost. The profits of some of the producers, some of the farmers, might go down slightly. And, you know, we have to figure out what to do about that. If that's a bad thing, if that's a good thing, you know, how much does it go down? Does it become unprofitable? How much? Well, then you raise the prices. But the economics of it will work out. But I say, let's go with the UFW, the United Farm Workers Union, and allow immigrant laborers, whether they are working in construction industries or whether they're working in agriculture or whatever. I mean, right across the board, you find illegal immigrants disproportionately overrepresented as meat packers, hotel maids, busboys, landscapers, painters, fruit and vegetable pickers, construction hands. Pay them a fair wage. And then let's say, here's our immigration policy. And if you want to become a citizen of the United States, you know, here's what you have to do. I mean, we have to deal reasonably and fairly with those people who are already in the United States. And we also have to deal with this very real issue of the collision between the number of immigrants, the number of people that we have coming into the United States who want to work, and the number of jobs that are available. I don't think, frankly, that that's such a big issue. I think that if we start paying living wages to more and more people, you're going to have more and more money running through the economy. You have more and more money running through the economy, you're going to create more demand for goods. As you create more demand for goods, you're going to have more people stepping out there to supply that demand, and that is going to grow the economy. This is the reverse of Reaganomics, by the way. This is classic economics. Reaganomics says, if you simply give money to the wealthy, then Reaganomics is incoherent. But the problem with immigration is this has kept low skill wages low. The average Mexican worker makes 1/10 the wage of his American counterpart. So why not come here if you can? Mexican immigrants are dominating jobs in southeastern poultry plants, western beef manufacturers, California farms. And not only Hispanic immigrants are used for cheap labor. Mining companies now in the western United States are looking to recruit from the Ukraine. Filipinos are being brought in to work as nurses in the United States. And we have 62,000 immigrants serving in the armed forces of the United States. We have an issue here that we have to confront with some honesty in America. It's time to look at this really clearly. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
It's the great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Hey, look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
Here she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy? Mm-hmm.
Bantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Now in Sacramento, there's Conan the Groper promising he's changed.
Cats behave badly sometimes.
Yes, it is true that I was on rowdy movie sets, and I have done things that were not right, which I thought then was playful, but now I recognize that I have offended people.
I thought I was being playful. Just because I grabbed her breast, I thought I was playful.
Kathy's laughing at my Schwarzenegger. I'm sorry, I can't do it. All right, you do it.
I've groped and molested women in the past, but if you elect me, I promise I'll never do it again, because you know powerful politicians never abuse their power for sex.
Okay.
And that's how it's done.
Okay.
Hello, cutie pie. Your clothes, give them to me. Now. Come on.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Democracy Zone, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Representative George Nethercutt, this congressman from Spokane, Washington, has been widely quoted as having said, it is a better and more, you know, as part of the PR offensive on the part of this administration. He was one of the guys that they brought over to Iraq, and he looked around and he says, hey, things aren't as bad here as a little bit. And he says, it's a better and more important story than losing a couple of soldiers every day. So I called up his office and said, do you have, you know, did he really say this? And they're like, oh, no, that was all out of context. And I said, well, could you send me the original quote? And they didn't. They sent me a press release talking about, you know, with a whole bunch of talking points, but it didn't include the original quote. So I have to assume that it was a moment of exuberance, perhaps, on his part. But this is the core of what the administration is trying to say right now is that, you know, don't look at those boys coming back in body bags. You know, they won't allow cameras in the military hospitals where our GIs are recovering. You can't even as a family member walk in there with a video camera. They will not allow it. It's, you know, talk about controlling the story here. And now we find some of you know, this thing with these letters, it turns out that this guy, Lieutenant Colonel Dominic Caracillo, or Caracillo, however he pronounces it, I actually, you know, you look at, do a web search on this guy, and he's written a bunch of reviews of books on Amazon.com, and he's apparently written a couple of books or articles himself. He's quite articulate, good writer, and apparently good enough that he wrote this letter, and he cranked out 500 of them, identical form letters sent to newspapers across the country with different signatures, not the 11 that we were talking about. Military officials say they were unaware of any plans to discipline Lieutenant Colonel Caracillo. They said his intentions were honorable. He was trying to help out the administration with the charm offensive. It's extraordinary what is going on. Douglas MacArthur, our quote for the day, we have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door. We have a greater and more equitable system. It's called democracy. Let's make it work. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of a brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. A remote-controlled bomb tore apart an armored vehicle in a U.S. diplomatic convoy Wednesday, killing three American security guards and wounding a fourth in an unprecedented attack on a U.S. target in the Palestinian territories. The attack on a convoy of diplomats entering Gaza was a dramatic departure from typical militant operations, which usually target Israeli soldiers and civilians. It was almost certain to lead to greater U.S. pressure for a Palestinian crackdown on militant groups. President Bush leaned on senators to back his call for nearly $87 billion in reconstruction and military aid to Iraq and Afghanistan, even as some Republicans attempt to make Iraq repay part of the money. The White House has launched a vigorous lobbying effort to kill loan proposals as the Senate and House get ready to vote on a huge spending measure this week. The administration says a loan would burden Iraq with too much additional debt. But Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine said she did not want U.S. taxpayers saddled with the cost of rebuilding Iraq when the U.S. economy is still fragile. Criminal prosecutors at the Justice Department and top FBI officials have privately criticized Attorney General John Ashcroft for failing to recuse himself or appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the leak of a CIA operative's identity. The criticism reflects the first sign of dissension in the department and the FBI as the inquiry nears a critical phase. The Attorney General must decide whether to convene a grand jury, which could compel White House officials to testify. Mr. Ashcroft and Alberto Gonzalez, White House counsel, have also been under fire for their initial handling of the case. The Justice Department allowed the White House to wait overnight on September 28th before sending notification ordering White House employees not to destroy records related to the link. Labor unrest spread in California on Wednesday as bus drivers walked out in solidarity with striking transit workers. 70,000 grocery clerks from three chains spent their fourth day on picket lines, and nearly half of L.A. County Sheriff's deputies called in sick Wednesday. More IE America Network news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A battery-powered mosquito trap in a public park was mistaken for a bomb and caused a four-hour uproar Tuesday that halted railroad traffic in southeastern Pennsylvania. The scare came a day after explosives were reported stolen in the area. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Nothing complements a ball game like a bag of roasted peanuts. I like to eat them 3-4 at a time, and I'm talking the jumbo ones, lightly salted and fresh from the shell.
Ah, peanuts, baseball, and the crack of my tooth!
Don't let toothaches interfere with your life. When you can't get to the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol. It contains the same strong pain relief medicine your dentist uses, so it works faster than you can say, ah. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone. Use as directed.
The rabid partisans of the Republican far right truly loathe Senator Paul Wellstone, the spirited and popular Minnesota progressive who died in a plane crash last year. In a testament to their partisan loathing, Minnesota right-wingers have put out an ugly post-mortem bumper sticker that angrily says of Wellstone, "He's dead. Get over it." But Paul, or at least his spirit, just won't die. Indeed, Paul and his wife Sheila, who also died in the crash, are now the rallying point of an important and exciting organizing effort to carry their spirit and policies into a long-term campaign to build a progressive future for our country. It's called Wellstone Action, and it literally is taking action to bring power back to America's grassroots. Among modern political figures, Wellstone was unique, for instead of throwing all of his campaign funds at pollsters, consultants, and TV ads, he put a big percentage into grassroots organizing. He and his staffers ran a series of weekend political boot camps called Camp Wellstone, where they trained thousands of volunteers, campaign managers, and future candidates. By strengthening the civic skills of on-the-ground people, Paul strengthened his own populist base, enhanced democracy, and extended the framework for an ongoing progressive movement. Now, the good people who worked with Paul and Sheila are continuing this democracy-building effort by taking the Camp Wellstone concept national. Wellstone Action is holding 9 or so intensive training camps this year in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, with about 20 Camp Wellstones planned cross-country next year. If they build it, people will come, for folks are thirsting for community and a politics that matters, and this is one political effort that genuinely puts people first. This is Jim Hightower saying, to connect to Camp Wellstone, call 651-645-3939.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch when charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, and believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live, also from the Sirius satellite radio system, and on radiopower.org, IEAmericaRadio.com, Live365.com, and other web radio stations. RadioPower.org. Take just a moment and recommend that you, if you are listening on RadioPower.org, that you support them. It's a worthy venture that Shelby is doing without any. This is not a profit-making thing that they're running. For centuries, pillage by invading armies was a normal part of warfare, writes The Guardian this Monday, a way in which to reward badly paid or unpaid troops for risking their lives in battle. Nowadays, at least in civilized countries, we don't let our troops rampage. We leave the pillaging to men in suits, says The Guardian. And we don't call it pillaging anymore. We call it economic development. What do we have in mind for Iraq? And how is it helping the president and his buddies? What's going on in Afghanistan? And how is it melting down? How quickly are we trying to get ourselves out of there as the thing falls apart? What's going on with Syria and the axis of evil? Is Arnold Schwarzenegger going to explain his meetings with Ken Lay? We got these and a whole bunch of other things to get to in this hour. Interesting, lots of interesting stuff. And your calls, if you want to call, if you have thoughts, questions, ideas, notes, whatever, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And in the meantime, we have smuggled out of the Betty Ford Clinic, apparently. Apparently, today's Thursday. Apparently, Rush is still doing his show, but he's doing it into, like, the wallboard. But somebody recorded it, and this little clip seems to have made its way out and showed up in my email box.
And speaking of the future, my next book, I Told You I Was Right and I Was Wrong, is due out shortly after I am. I really should be working on it right now rather than engaging you, my friends of the brain cell audience, but I have always respected you and given you the benefit of your own thoughts, and now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s. We've got another caller, and I want to pay a tribute to the engineers here at the Betty Ford Institute for Advanced Nonlinear Studies for putting it through. Hello, you're on the AIB Network on Open Line Friday.
Rush, it's John Ashcroft, and it's Thursday.
Sure, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the call, but it is my hallucination, and that kind of obviates the conventional calendar approach.
Rush, I know you have a lot of time to fill, but mm-hmm. I've got detainees to sort. I just wanted to call up and say God wants his talent back.
Remarkable. That from Harry Shurer. Harry Shurer does a show, Le Show, which is carried on public broadcasting stations all across the country, and he ran that, I believe, last weekend. It's on his website, harryshurer.com. H-A-R-R-Y-S-H-S-C-H-E-A-R-E-S, Shurer. You know how to spell Shurer. I have to see things before. Anyway, HarryShurer.com. Remarkable. Very, very funny. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Frank in Eureka, California, has some thoughts on immigrants, on the topic we were talking about last hour. Frank, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Frank, I can't hear you. You need to speak up.
Okay. I'll speak louder. I live just a little bit north of the Napa Valley area in California, mm-hmm. and my family owns a small winery. And I just wanted to say that most of these grape pickers and laborers really do make living wages.
They do,
and they're a big part of the underground economy.
Do you mean across California, or do you mean in your business?
All over the state, especially with regard to the smaller wineries. And there's hundreds and hundreds of small wineries that they actually, a lot of them prefer to work in the smaller wineries because they can work there completely undetected and without having to report a nickel of it to the IRS. They also benefit welfare. They're able to collect welfare for their families and not report any of their earnings. And so we're talking about the vast majority of them are making between $8 and $9 an hour, which may not sound like a lot of money, but they have a method of collective bargaining, let's say, where if they just don't like the pay, they just leave en masse. They just leave as an entire group, and then
sort of like a union, de facto union without the union.
Yeah, exactly, precisely.
Frank, it sounds like what you're identifying is that we have a situation, or you have a situation there in your area in California, and perhaps with your business, where you've got people who don't have access to legal protections. They're not paying into Social Security. They won't have access to any kind of retirement. They don't have access to equal protection under the law. Because if they were to say that, you know, they were being, say somebody was being abused or harassed or whatever, if they tried to turn in an employer, they're going to themselves face deportation.
You're right about that.
Mm-hmm. Say that again?
You're right about that.
Okay. And yet, at the same time, they're making enough money that they really, you know, it should be considered part of the normal economy, you're
yeah.
saying. So that sounds to me like a strong argument for simply saying, let's not have this be the underground economy anymore. Now, you know, let's legalize them, let them pay into Social Security and pay their taxes, and you know, that's going to increase your costs there, Frank, running your winery, because you're going to have to pay FICA on these guys, you know, matching payments and things.
That's right.
In fact, how do you avoid that in the first place? I have a small business, and if I pay somebody, I have to pay that.
Right. Well, you know, most of these wineries are so small, you can just say that the family does it all. And it's
so it's a cash economy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So actually what we have here is a situation where both the employer and the employee are breaking the law.
Yeah.
And everybody's kind of winking at it.
That's true. Yeah, that's basically true. They also get, in a lot of cases, free housing, which is something I thought you should know. A lot of these smaller wineries actually provide housing, which, you know, I've walked in through a lot of these places. My father is the one who owns the winery, and I've visited your county area. There's probably
don't give us too many details here, folks.
Oh no, I won't. Well, anyway, that's about all I wanted to say.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? You know, what do you think is what's the core of the situation here? I mean, here's what comes to my mind. If we were to say, okay, we close the door on immigration right now, and we legalize all the illegal immigrants who are here, and we say to the employers, hey, if you're already paying $8 or $9 an hour, you've got to at least comply with the state minimum wage or the federal minimum wage, and you've got to meet the, you know, OSHA standards and whatnot, you know, exposure to pesticides and sexual harassment on the job and all these things. You've got to comply with these laws. And then a few years goes by, and these people start lifting themselves out of poverty, as Dennis Weaver's family did back in the 30s. And then who's going to be picking the grapes?
Yeah, good point. Good question.
I mean, I think that that's the position that the conservatives are promoting. And my answer to that would be, who's going to be picking the grapes is, well, you're going to have to raise the wage that you're paying slightly, because, you know, there's a marketplace out there. And if you offer enough money, people will show up. I mean, you'll get people leaving their jobs at Walmart to come pick grapes. I'm curious, Frank, what percentage of the cost of your product is represented by the labor?
What percentage?
Yeah. Say on a $10 bottle of wine, how many of those at retail? So that's probably going out the door at wholesale at $5, right?
Well, actually, most of these small wineries just sell directly to the customer at the winery, at the point of sale.
Okay. So on a $10 bottle of wine, how much of that is represented by labor?
Oh boy, you know, my father would have the information on this, but I would say probably $2 per bottle.
So it's maybe 20%.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so if your labor costs were to double, if you started paying people $16 an hour. Or if you were paying people $12 an hour, plus you were paying for medical benefits, plus they were paying into a 401k, plus you were matching FICA,
right?
That $10 bottle of wine would become a $12 bottle of wine.
Yes.
And it would still, you'd still be competitive, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
You've made a really good point there. I haven't really looked at the entire picture.
I see that's the thing. I think that we really need to get a global view on this stuff, and so many people are trying to demagogue the issue on all sides.
Yeah.
Because there are these hidden interests that are at work, and a lot of people, good people, you know, who, like you say, own small wineries, or who are the laborers themselves, are caught in having to defend a position that other people, you know, from the outside looks indefensible. Why should we be giving driver licenses to immigrants on the one hand? On the other hand, why should we be encouraging illegal immigrants, not to immigrants, but to illegal immigrants?
Right.
And on the other hand, why should we be encouraging illegal immigration? Or on the third hand, if we discourage illegal immigration, then, you know, are people's profits going to fall? Well, you know, I think for the smaller businesses like you, probably it would be irrelevant. But for a huge corporation, I mean, you've got some agriculture businesses in California that have tens of thousands of employees that run millions and millions of dollars, and there the, you know, 1% in the labor cost might mean as much as $1 million in the pocket of the CEO.
Right, right. Well, so, I just thought I'd bring up this issue of this very small vintner because it often gets left out of the equation.
Yeah.
When we're talking, people usually think of Gallo and, you know, the big, big companies that, like, as you say, employ hundreds and thousands of people. The small wineries, which do constitute, are a big part of the economy here, actually get left out of the equation quite often.
Question, Frank, do you guys sell organic wines by any chance?
Yeah.
You do?
I hesitate because...
I'm not asking for a product plug or anything, but I was just curious. A good friend of mine owns Eco Wine, the organic wine company, www.ecowine.com, and they're giving away free samples right now to get people to turn on to organic wines. And I'm wondering if this is a trend that's happening out there. I think it's
a cool you know
thing.
What? I don't think it is a trend. I hear the music.
Yeah, right. We've got to wrap it up. Right. Frank, thanks. It's been great talking with you. Raymond and Jan, hang on. We'll pick up your calls right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Is downing Metamucil for regularity getting you down?
It's too hard to take.
But you must.
It's thick and icky, gloppy and gritty. I cannot.
Next time, try FiberCon. It's a better way to stay regular because just two caplets and a refreshing glass of water is all you need to get the same results as Metamucil powder.
FiberCon! Oh, FiberCon! You're refreshingly easier to take.
Use only as directed.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com and then get back to work. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. And a Core Hotel.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern.
The rabid partisans of the Republican far right truly loathe Senator Paul Wellstone, the spirited and popular Minnesota progressive who died in a plane crash last year. In a testament to their partisan loathing, Minnesota right-wingers have put out an ugly post-mortem bumper sticker that angrily says of Wellstone, "He's dead! Get over it!" But Paul, or at least his spirit, just won't die. Indeed, Paul and his wife Sheila, who also died in the crash, are now the rallying point of an important and exciting organizing effort to carry their spirit and policies into a long-term campaign to build a progressive future for our country. It's called Wellstone Action, and it literally is taking action to bring power back to America's grassroots. Among modern political figures, Wellstone was unique, for instead of throwing all of his campaign funds at pollsters, consultants, and TV ads, he put a big percentage into grassroots organizing. He and his staffers ran a series of weekend political boot camps called Camp Wellstone, where they trained thousands of volunteers, campaign managers, and future candidates. By strengthening the civic skills of on-the-ground people, Paul strengthened his own populist base, enhanced democracy, and extended the framework for an ongoing progressive movement. Now, the good people who worked with Paul and Sheila are continuing this democracy-building effort by taking the Camp Wellstone concept national. Wellstone Action is holding 9 or so intensive training camps this year in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, with about 20 Camp Wellstones planned cross-country next year. If they build it, people will come, for folks are thirsting for community and a politics that matters, and this is one political effort that genuinely puts people first. This is Jim Hightower saying, to connect to Camp Wellstone, call 651-645-3939.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
From behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone, high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman exposing the con in conservative. We created the minimum wage in 1938. Okay, we have this conceptualgorilla.com has this is G-U-E gorilla. By the way, Harry Scherer is. Let me get it right here in front of me. So Harry S-H-E-A-R-E-R. Thank you. Trying to spell in my head is something I just never learned how to do. Anyhow, we've raised it from time to time, Conceptual Gorilla says, from time to time since. The notable examples would be 1957, 1963, and 1996. When you look at inflation, we'll start in 1957, the first time we substantially raised the minimum wage. Did inflation go up? Inflation in 57 was 3.38%. In 58, it was 2.98%. In 59, inflation fell to 0.58%. Inflation actually went down. 1960, 1.72%. 1961, 1.13%. 1962, 1.12%. 1963, 1.10%. 1964, 1.37% through the Kennedy administration. Then LBJ started spending like crazy in Vietnam. 1965, inflation's 1.62%. And going into deficit spending. 1966, 2.92%. 1967, 2.84%. 1968, 4.26%. 1969, 5.29%. The chickens were coming home to roost. The other big increase, but it had nothing to do with raising the minimum wage. In fact, the minimum wage caused inflation to go down. Again, look at 1996. In 1996, we had one of the largest increases in the minimum wage. And in 1996, inflation was at 2.96%. We increased the minimum wage. It dropped to 2.35%, then to 1.51, then to 0.2. In 1999, 2.21, and it has stayed low. This is not the wage is not what drives inflation, contrary to the hallucinations of Alan Greenspan. Raymond in Cement City has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, Raymond, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Cement City, where?
Cement City, Michigan, south of Jackson.
Oh, yeah, okay. I've
been
through
there. Yeah, it's a real solid community.
Yeah, I grew up in Michigan. Yep.
Listen, Tom, I was in the car driving and listening to your last segment on the labor in, you know, migrant labor, people coming in from immigrants coming in, the illegal immigrants. And, you know, I think just like everything, these are all complex problems. And I think to what you have been talking about on previous segments and shows is we really need to deal with this fact that we have a inequality in our trade standards. And by that I mean is we're trying to compete with people working for a nickel an hour kind of thing. I think this problem that you're talking about, it gets into that because as soon as you start paying people more for agricultural products or working on agricultural products in the country, then there'll be more incentive to bring products in from other countries where the wages are cheaper. So
right, as we're doing right now from Chile. In fact, there's a hot discussion about this very topic going on in our chat room right now. And one of the folks, I think it was Pacecop, had made the point that He says, I'm saying if you want these types of laws, these tariffs, to enforce them, you're going to have to be willing to go to war. And his earlier point, you know, if we tried to impose our labor standards on other countries, I don't think anybody's talking about imposing our labor standards on other countries, just saying that every country should have labor standards appropriate to a living wage within that country. But then you put up tariffs. You actually do, and we historically have had them from 1784 up until recently, to protect your domestic industries. I think that's an entirely appropriate thing.
Yeah, and I think we need to go back to that consideration, and I think that another piece, you know, that's a whole big area, but another piece is we need to start thinking about how to export prosperity, help other countries get to a point where their own internal organization and
good point, Raymond. Good point. Let me address that right after the break. Thank you for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the true people's radio. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Some subway cars follow a route to the bottom of the sea, and the new riders are fish and mollusks. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Tiny sea creatures and fish make homes on rocks and reefs, and people sometimes try to help them out by sinking other things that will serve the same purpose. Old ships and subway cars are just a few kinds of scrap that people deliberately put out to sea to make new homes for marine life. Bill Muir is a national expert on marine pollution with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. He says people once tried to make artificial reefs out of some questionable material. Things like refrigerators ended up damaging natural reefs and not helping the marine life. The government now has guidelines to be sure people treat the seabed as a resource instead of a dump. Muir has led programs to clean and sink things like retired army tanks and subway cars. He says they can create a reef that will attract sea plants and grazing fish.
The fish are actually grazing on it as you would have in a wooded environment where you might have the deer grazing on the nearby foliage in a woods.
Earlier this year, the state of New Jersey started a project to sink as many as 250 old subway cars from New York off its shores. Prior to the sinking, the cars are stripped of all plastic, degradable materials, and grease to avoid contamination of the marine ecosystem. Muir says sunken subway cars often become homes for mussels. Mussels feed by filtering organic material out of the water, and Muir says the mussel beds sometimes improve water quality and clarity at the same time. Muir says artificial reef programs like this are common around the world. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The back. best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's turn up our nose at the World Court of Law, for justice was never the point of this war. We're bombing to stop future terrorist acts. Can't you tell a war from a terror attack? I'll prove that I'm loyal and rush to the store, where spending is my contribution to war. And the American flag's on the counter for sale. We're all made in China by prisoners in jail. Airplanes drop thousands of meals from the air to feed starving millions and prove that we care. Since there are too few of these charity meals, I hope they don't all fall on mine-laden fields. I'll prove that I'm loyal and right.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. The Tom Hartman Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Hey, here's the Raymond raised a really good point, and this is another one of the talking points that the cons use to rationalize America running around the world imposing our ideas of what we call the free market on other countries. And what we've seen, for example, in Mexico is that after NAFTA, poverty has exploded in Mexico. Pollution has gone off the scale. Cancers are going up, you know, because we've moved all our dirty industries down there. And so, number one, the idea that we are somehow responsible for the prosperity of the world reflects an extraordinary cultural arrogance. Because it implies that we understand the definition of prosperity and that our definition of prosperity is the only definition that's real or has value. And our definition of prosperity, according to many people that I know around the world, in indigenous communities where I've lived or worked or hung out with these folks, they think that our definition of prosperity is bizarre and dysfunctional. It's culturally destructive. There are many people in the world who look at our exploding teenage suicide rates and our gun violence and murder rates in the United States and the fact that we have more people in prison than any nation in the world, both on an absolute numbers basis and a per capita basis. And they look at us and they go, whoa. We really think that the world envies us. It's a great mythos. Much of the world does, of course. But they also envy Norway or Sweden or France, where people are required to take a 3-week paid vacation every year. Typically, people get 4 to 5 weeks. But the law requires a minimum of 3 weeks, where there are strong labor unions, where there are strong right-to-work laws. So number one, this whole idea just demonstrates an incredible cultural arrogance. Number two, there is this idea of local homeostasis, that balance will be achieved in local areas, that every area has its own resource base, and that resource base is going to define how prosperous that area can be by using our definition of prosperity, that is, how much stuff they can have. And it won't be the same all around the world. And that's a simple reality, but that doesn't mean that people have to have miserable lives. They just may have different lives than us. I'm suggesting that if you promote egalitarian democracy, you don't have to promote specific goods or services, and you don't even have to promote specific economics. You certainly don't have to promote trade. Promote egalitarian democracy, and people will. You give people the opportunity to work things out themselves, their own way, in a democratic process, and they will. The key to it is to go back to the way it was in the United States for the first 150 years of this nation, and that is to say that no special interest group, particularly corporations, may have the right or the power or the ability to seize control of government, as has happened here in the United States, where we have corporations that have inserted their CEOs as our president and vice president and walk the halls of Congress and are literally writing the legislation that gets passed and buying our legislators. This is a crime against democracy. This is one of the most destructive, anti-democratic, anti-freedom things that is happening on planet Earth. And this is not what the founders had in mind, and it's something that must be reversed. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jan in Colorado has been patiently waiting. Thank you, Jan, for letting me finish that rant, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. I understand, well, a lot of focus has been put on...
Jan, I need you to speak a little louder. I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
A lot of focus has been put on illegal immigration from south of our border. But is there not a lot of illegal immigration coming from other areas of the world when people come on student visas or visitors visas and never go home?
Yeah, that certainly does happen. And as we saw in 9/11, I think several of those people who were on those airplanes had come over on student visas that had expired. But and I don't have the numbers in front of me, frankly. But my guess would be, if you just look at for example, in California, how the Hispanic population is becoming, you know, a substantial minority, eventually may become a majority in California, that because it's physically easier to get in from the south than to come in on an airplane from Asia or Africa or Europe or Southern Asia, that there's more immigrants coming from the south. But I may be wrong, but I don't think so. I think that it just, you know, it's... It would be interesting. I'll look for statistics on that and share that if I can come across it.
Now,
Thanks for raising a good question, Jen.
I would appreciate it, because when we think of immigration right now, we think of immigrants coming from the south who take these jobs that our citizens would not want to take anyway because they're too dirty or too hard, which we're finding is not necessarily true. But I understand that people coming on student visas or visitors' visas who overstay and then are illegally here because they are not brown-skinned, they do compete with the majority group in jobs because they can pass for being not immigrants, not illegals.
Yeah, and that reveals the racism dimension of the issue that the Reverend Lawson, I think his name was, spoke out about in that clip that we had in the first hour as well.
And those are the better-paying jobs. That they would be committed.
In many cases, yeah. Although, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out and what happens. And yeah, I'll look for some stats on that. And I'll report back, Jan. Thanks for raising that. A good question. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Jeff in Denver, Colorado is on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. I'm really glad you are probably the only person I've heard talk about the homeostatic economy, how actually it can work.
And yeah, most people don't even get the concept.
It's interesting, you know, when we are so Americentric that people are saying, oh, America's the best this, the best that. It reminds me of the quote in one Tom Robbins book where they said, I used to think the brain was the most important part of my body. Then I realized what was telling me that.
Okay, there you go, yeah.
And we're the ones saying, what do other people say? And this thing you're talking about, like, do other people envying us? Well, like, I spent time, one time when I was in Fiji, I was hanging around with this one guy who made $45 a week, a Fijian. I said, would you like to make more money? He goes, oh, no, I'd just be lazy then. He didn't want what we wanted. And I've been around the world in a lot of places where people don't want what we have.
Yes.
And I was then talking to a woman who was here in this country, so, oh, no, they want things like that. We should get them refrigerators. She got mad, you know, just saying that they want these things. We should bring these things to them. They don't want it necessarily. Some people do want to come here. They have really economic hardships.
Millions of them. I mean, let's acknowledge the fact that the United States is one of the most desirable destinations on Earth to immigrate to.
Yes, but as you said, they're also trying to go to Norway.
Because we historically have been a land of opportunity.
Yeah, but they're also trying to go to Norway and Australia and New Zealand and places like that.
Yeah, Australia is really, really having to crack down now. They've got all the folks from Indonesia and Malaysia have been sneaking in for a long, long time, and now they're really starting to, because of the whole terrorist thing, they're freaking out about it.
But you don't find the Norwegians, the Australians, desperately trying to get to the U.S. There are other parts of the world that are doing very, very well.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
Good point. Thank you, Jeff. And your story reminds me of a story which I think I told here several months ago, but it bears repeating. Dick Gregory and I went to Africa together back in 1981, as I recall. We had started a hospital, which was a feeding center. It was in the middle of a famine after the war with Idi Amin in Mbale, Uganda. And It then turned into a hospital, and it's now a center for. It now still is a hospital. It sees people, but also we've had so many people come and bring their children and die of AIDS that we've started pairing off AIDS orphans and AIDS widows and creating these family units and spreading them out all over the country and community. And it's really interesting how changing situations on the ground cause changing needs. But anyhow, Dick Gregory and I went over there in 81, and he came along to give some publicity to what we were doing. And it was his first trip to Africa. He was having a great time. And we were on the plane flying over there, and we just got in. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we had, you know, we were just wide awake and going over the Atlantic Ocean having this conversation. And we started talking about, you know, Vietnam and America and American foreign policy and all this stuff. And he says, you know what I don't understand, what I don't get? He says, I don't understand why we are running around the world trying to shove the American way of life down people's throats with the barrel of a gun. He says, when you've got something good, you don't have to force it on people. They will steal it. And that's the point, is that if we promote egalitarian democracy, if that's the primary ideal that we promote, not, gee, you can get rich, or, hey, you can have more stuff, or you can live like, you know, J, whatever his name is, J.W., J.D. on Dynasty, J.R., not that, but the idea of self-determination, of having a government of, by, and for the people, of deciding how you want to be living in and protecting the rights of minorities within your culture and civilization, and at the same time acknowledging the goals and aspirations of the majorities, that the idea of egalitarian democracy is something that people will steal. They will absolutely steal it. They did it in China, in Tiananmen Square, or they tried to. And they're still trying to, I would say, all over the world. You know, in Tiananmen Square, 15,000 people marched, many of them to their death and to imprisonment, carrying a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché statue of the what they call the goddess of democracy. It was the Statue of Liberty, that marvelous statue given to us by France. Where we started the hour, the spoils of war. I want to get back to this. For centuries, pillaged by invading armies. You know, okay, are we pillaging Iraq? Is that what's going on? There is this law, Article 39 and Article 43 of the United Nations Charter, that which is essentially a treaty that everybody signed, and so it's the law of the land that we have to live by as well, as long as we're a member of the United Nations and participating in this. Article 43 says that when occupying forces take over a country, they must, quote, ensure, as far as possible, public order and safety, while respecting, unless absolutely prevented, the laws in force in the country, end quote. Now, some would say that explicitly says, I'm sorry, Article 43, the Order 39 was George Bush's Order 39, and that and the Hague Regulations of 1907, which say that if you occupy a country, you must do it in a way that doesn't alter the nature of things. It says you have to respect the local system. And here now, Paul Bremer has issued his Order Number 39, which basically says that anything that is publicly owned in Iraq, all of these businesses, which were all owned by the government, are now up for sale. Anybody can buy them. And Article 55 of the UN Charter says that an occupying power is only the administrator of the state property. It must safeguard the capital of these properties and administer them in accordance with the rules of usufruct, which is with the rules of taking care of something but not taking it. There's a difference. You can't seize it. And in fact, what they're talking about here, the Attorney General of England, Lord Goldsmith, has raised this thing with Tony Blair in a letter, and he says the Fourth Geneva Convention and the 1907 Hague Regulations are being violated by the United States selling off this stuff. Wide-ranging reforms of governmental and administrative structures would not be lawful under the Hague rules. How can we sell off these companies that we don't own? The preamble of Mr. Bremer's order number 39 claims that it has such backing, but there's a lot of people in Washington and around the world who say no, absolutely not. And this is going to become a big issue. I'm telling you, this is going to be a real problem. It's also going to cause massive unemployment because the state-run industries in Iraq were perfectly willing to be inefficient because the government was the employer of last resort. It's one of the ways that Saddam ensured domestic tranquility. You hired people and they didn't have to work all that hard. You sell these to American companies and they're going to come in and they're going to demand certain labor activities, or they're going to bring in imported labor, and you're going to increase unemployment in Iraq, and that's not going to be helpful either. 1-800-TALK-YES. Katie in Charlottesville, North Carolina, I assume, on Iraq. Katie, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. I have a comment about what you were saying about Iraq and corporations, mm-hmm. especially. President Bush just signed an executive order giving all oil companies that go into Iraq complete
immunity,
complete amnesty from being sued under the Alien Tort Claims Act. And the Alien
right.
Tort Claims Act is one of the most powerful weapons that victims around the world have for fighting corporations that exploit them and exploit their labor. And around the world, oil companies have been violating the rights of indigenous people. And so now in Iraq, companies have complete amnesty from this law that's used as one of the only protections that victims have against these companies. And it's amazing to me that the president can just take away this right that victims have. And that's an example, I think, of the president's complete bending over backwards to help out companies
Help out his buddies who are giving him millions, tens of millions of dollars to get reelected. You're right, Katie. It's an absolute abomination. This administration is arguably the most corrupt administration in the history of the union. Katie, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. This is the Tom Hartman Program, news without conflicts of global corporate interest. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams. It's the great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Look, if you had the
chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Holden Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Anna?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, there. This is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
Yeah, we're going to catch him doing something right. Senator Bob Graham of Florida said today that he will file a bill to prohibit charging service members for meals while they are hospitalized as a result of injuries or illnesses suffered while in combat or training for combat. Graham says, how can we justify spending billions of dollars on no-bid contracts to rebuild Iraq, then turn around and charge an injured soldier $8.10 a day for meals while he's being treated for war injuries? Marine Staff Sergeant Bill Merwin of Nevada, he was billed $243 for his meals while he was in the hospital because his foot got blown off in Iraq. Ain't privatization wonderful? So Bob Graham says he's going to put into Congress a law saying no more. It's against the law to charge service members for their meals. Thank you, Bob Graham. Well done.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Kim in Texas has some thoughts on the last few minutes of the program.
You mentioned the... Those 147 businesses or industries that were for sale over in Iraq. Mm-hmm. I remember listening a couple months ago that literally we used our soldiers to enforce them being shut down. Because,
right.
Let's face it, if they're shut down, then they bring in bargain basement prices. You know, you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, then they open them up again. Once again, like you said, probably not even using Iraqis. Bring in cheaper labor, and they increase their profits. They can take them out clear. They can take 100% of the profits out of their country.
Yeah, the executive order number 39, or the CPA order number 39 that Paul Bremer issued, says that the unrestricted rights to establish business and also give foreign investors unrestricted rights to repatriate profits, dividends, interests, and royalties immediately and in full. In other words, you don't have to leave any cash. You don't have to even leave any drops left in that country.
And do you remember that in February, that there was an article in the Wall Street Journal or New York Times? Wall Street Journal, I think it was. They talked about this very policy. And and everybody said, oh, no. That was written, that's obsolete. And it was developed by the Agency for International Development in conjunction with the Treasury Department.
Surprise, surprise.
You know, and they kept on saying, no. And then they talked about, I think you're the one talked about Judicial Watch posting on their website a map showing the various oil districts.
Yeah, Cheney was dividing up the oil fields of Iraq with Ken Lay and other undisclosed buddies in the White House in the spring of 2001 before 9/11.
That's right. In the meantime, they want us to give grants to this country, in other words, and increase our deficits and our
long-term
loans.
It's absolutely incredible. And they've got so many Americans believing it. I was on a radio show this morning on some city out west. I don't know where it was. It was somewhere in the Rocky Mountain states. And I was talking about ADD. I've got a new book out on it, and so I'm doing, you know, radio book tour. And I said, do we want better schools or do we not want $87 million for Iraq? And some guy calls up and goes, that's not $87 million for Iraq. That's $87 million for the troops. How can you? It must be some liberal. Rah, rah, rah. You know, it's like, wow. It's brainwashed Americans. Welcome to it. This is Tom. Thanks, Kim, for the call. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Criminal prosecutors at the Justice Department and top FBI officials have privately criticized Attorney General John Ashcroft for failing to recuse himself or appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the leak of a CIA operative's identity. The criticism reflects the first sign of dissension in the department and the FBI as the inquiry nears a critical phase. The Attorney General must decide whether to convene a grand jury, which could compel White House officials to testify. Mr. Ashcroft and Alberto Gonzalez, White House counsel, have also been under fire for their initial handling of the case. The Justice Department allowed the White House to wait overnight on September 28th before sending notification ordering White House employees not to destroy records related to the link. A remote-controlled bomb tore apart an armored vehicle in a U.S. diplomatic convoy Wednesday, killing 3 American security guards and wounding a 4th in an unprecedented attack on a U.S. target in the Palestinian territories. The attack on a convoy of diplomats entering Gaza was a dramatic departure from typical militant operations, which usually target Israeli soldiers and civilians. It was almost certain to lead to greater U.S. pressure for a Palestinian crackdown on militant groups. President Bush leaned on senators to back his call for nearly $87 billion in reconstruction and military aid to Iraq and Afghanistan, even as some Republicans attempt to make Iraq repay part of the money. The White House has launched a vigorous lobbying effort to kill loan proposals as the Senate and House get ready to vote on the huge spending measure this week. The administration says a loan would burden Iraq with too much additional debt. But Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine said she did not want U.S. taxpayers saddled with the cost of rebuilding Iraq when the U.S. economy is still fragile. Labor unrest spread in California on Wednesday as bus drivers walked out in solidarity with striking transit workers. 70,000 grocery clerks from 3 chains spent their 4th day on picket lines, and nearly half of L.A. County Sheriff's deputies called in sick Wednesday. More IE America Network news after this.
It
won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A wayward deer entered a clothing store in Linden, New Jersey, and wandered around for more than an hour on Monday before it was shot with a tranquilizer dart by police. The full-grown antlered buck was expected to be returned to the woods once the tranquilizers wore off. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
The rabid partisans of the Republican far right truly loathe Senator Paul Wellstone, the spirited and popular Minnesota progressive who died in a plane crash last year. In a testament to their partisan loathing, Minnesota right-wingers have put out an ugly post-mortem bumper sticker that angrily says of Wellstone, "He's dead! Get over it!" But Paul, or at least his spirit, just won't die. Indeed, Paul and his wife Sheila, who also died in the crash, are now the rallying point of an important and exciting organizing effort to carry their spirit and policies into a long-term campaign to build a progressive future for our country. It's called Wellstone Action, and it literally is taking action to bring power back to America's grassroots. Among modern political figures, Wellstone was unique, for instead of throwing all of his campaign funds at pollsters, consultants, and TV ads, he put a big percentage into grassroots organizing. He and his staffers ran a series of weekend political boot camps called Camp Wellstone, where they trained thousands of volunteers, campaign managers, and future candidates. By strengthening the civic skills of on-the-ground people, Paul strengthened his own populist base, enhanced democracy, and extended the framework for an ongoing progressive movement. Now, the good people who worked with Paul and Sheila are continuing this democracy-building effort by taking the Camp Wellstone concept national. Wellstone Action is holding 9 or so intensive training camps this year in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, with about that people will come, for folks are thirsting for community and a politics that matters, and this is one political effort that genuinely puts people first. This is Jim Hightower saying, to connect to Camp Wellstone, call 651-645-3939.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. It's Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, and this is when we take a break from talking about politics and what's going on internationally, all that kind of stuff, you know, and drill down into a topic that doesn't seem to be being talked about a lot. They get into things, that, and particularly where there's a lot of misconceptions or where people are really confused about things.
And I think we have a marvelous opportunity to do that today with our guest. This segment, by the way, is what we refer to as our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Oh, maybe and maybe not. Anne Louise Bardach, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Anne Louise, is the author of Cuba Confidential, Love and Vengeance in Miami and Havana. A remarkable book. She's the award-winning journalist, has covered Cuba for more than a decade for the New York Times, Vanity Fair, and many other national publications. Anne Louise, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you for having me.
How do I pronounce your last name, and how would you prefer to be called?
It's always pronounced at people's whim. I've given up. You know, I guess it's technically Bardach because it's of German origin, but I've heard everything, and Bardach is fine, or Bardach. We'll take it.
But you would say Bardach.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And Anne or Anne Louise?
That's fine, too. Anne Louise or that is works either way.
Okay, great. Anne Louise, I'd like to start out by just playing a clip here of George W., and then I want to get into some of the past behind this. But now that we know that back in the spring of 2001, before 9/11, Dick Cheney was meeting with Ken Lay and others in the White House, and we know from the Judicial Watch lawsuit, dividing up the oil fields of Iraq, and the documents were recently released from the lawsuit against Cheney, actually listing what oil companies would buy which oil from which oil fields once we had taken control of Iraq, and this even before 9/11. When this administration talks about planning for the future of another nation, apparently, it's something that we should take seriously. George W. Bush had this to say recently. This was on October 16th.
Third, our government will establish a commission for the assistance to a free Cuba to plan for the happy day when Castro's regime is no more and democracy comes to the island.
And he added,
this commission will be co-chaired by the Secretary of State, Colin Powell, and the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Mel Martinez. They will draw upon experts within our government to plan for Cuba's transition from Stalinist rule.
Cuba's transition here.
To a free and open society. To identify ways to hasten the arrival of that day.
And to hasten the arrival of that day. What's going on here, Anne Louise?
Well, you might want to call it Operation Cuba Freedom. What's going on here is the October 10th, last Friday, when the president spoke in the White House. October 10th is the anniversary of a very famous day in Cuban history called El Grito de Yara, which is, you know, the battle cry of Yara, which was sort of the beginning of the independence war against Spain. And the president used that day to speak to a certain segment of Cuban exiles that he believes are very important to his reelection campaign. Actually, it had very little to do with Cuba and a lot to do with Miami-Dade electoral policy.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is that there is a common myth out there that Cuban-American exiles are all the certain stripe, that they're all far right-wing and they're very conservative and they're kind of... you know, there's a certain stereotype. Well, in fact, that's not the case. And the polling in South Florida, the last polls over the last year, 2 years in South Florida, have indicated that more than 50% of exiles no longer support the embargo but want a non-confrontational approach to Cuba.
They have figured out that if you open things up, then eventually people come around, or at least that's the theory?
Well, first of all, there's only one point of consensus about the American embargo on Cuba, whether you're right, left, center, conservative, progressive, whatever, and that's that it's an utter failure.
Yeah.
It's had a 44-year trial run. Its stated goals was to bring democracy to Cuba, open elections and all that. None of that has happened. The bottom line is that Fidel Castro won and we lost. He's there, and he's chewing on his 10th American president. And we keep doing the same thing over and over again. And what was very interesting about the speech on Friday was really who was invited and who was not invited.
And that was.
And it's caused a lot of ill will in the exile community. First of all, goes without saying that no moderate or liberal or progressive exile groups were included. But on the middle right and far right, there were also some serious exclusions. For instance, no one from the Cuban American National Foundation, conservative, reasonably hardline group, was invited. The reason
they
were not invited was that in the 2000 election, they had the temerity not to endorse a presidential candidate. And they they had met with Vice President candidate Joe Lieberman. And as a result, they've been basically banished.
Well, this is an administration that has turned, you know, harming their enemies and rewarding their friends into an art form. It's funny,
I called one of the board members of the Cuban American National Foundation. And remember that they are, regard this, it's definitely a hardline conservative group. And one of them said to me, when it comes to revenge, these guys have no equal. And then he went on to point out, look what they did. They exposed a CIA agent out of vengeance.
And Joe Wilson's wife, right?
Yes, this was the point they made when I said, I can't believe that none of you are there. I mean, you've been in lockstep. You kind of created the embargo policy, and now you're excluded. And this was his remark. He said, look what they did to a CIA agent who they were angry at somebody in their family. This was the comment that came right back at me. And again, this is from people who, right across the boards in that part of the Cuban American National Foundation, they're registered Republicans who supported Bush. So this is the way they spoke about the situation.
Quite remarkable, Ana Louise. I have a caller on the line here. If you don't mind taking a call, Shannon has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, she's in Augusta, Georgia. Shannon has a question for Ana Louise Bardock. Shannon, go ahead.
It's kind of a two-part question. First for Ana Louise, what do you? It seems kind of ominous hearing George talk about hastening that happy day or whatever it is.
Right.
And second for Tom, I read in your book on equal protection about how corporations offered their lawyers to newly democratic countries, and basically had them put in their constitutions that corporations are persons and whatnot.
It's happened in South Africa. It's happening in many of the countries
I'm wondering what we can do basically to make sure that doesn't happen, you know, in the event that Cuba becomes a so-called democratic nation in our lifetime here. And I'll just take my question off the air here.
Okay. Shannon, I'm sorry. Thank you, Shannon. Ana Louise, your thoughts?
Yes. All right. Well, first of all, I don't know anything about the book or the other situation. I can only speak to my book, you know, Cuba Confidential, Love and Vengeance in Miami and Havana, because that's really, I'm not aware of the other situation.
Sure.
But in my book, I do talk about these family feuds that go from the very, from one end of the Cuban system down to the bottom, beginning with Fidel Castro down to the case of, like, say, Ilian Gonzalez. And that is the element of the broken family. And in Fidel Castro's family, it happens to be linked to Diaz Balart's. The man who was in the Rose Garden, the two brothers, in fact, who were in the Rose Garden with the president on Friday, were Lincoln and Mario Diaz-Balart, both of whom now are congressmen from Miami, and they happen to be nephews of Fidel Castro. And one of the elements that makes Cuba so intractable, so immune to resolution, is this trope of the broken family. Because 50 years ago, Fidel Castro was married to their aunt. And the Diaz-Balarts basically were one of the most powerful families in Cuba under Batista. And Castro had married into the dictator Fulgencio Batista's family. And that D.S. Ballart, their father and grandfather, were very big officials in the Ministry of Interior. That's what we call the FBI, CIA, but in Latin America actually means also the secret police, more to the point. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the D.S. Ballart left very quickly. They established themselves in Miami, and now there are two who are the congressmen. And really what's the secret agenda, or not-so-secret agenda, is that Lincoln D.S. Ballart wants to replace Fidel Castro. And the administration seems more than obliged to want to help him implement this. And that is the feeling of a lot of exile groups, is that they're getting pushed out of the way for Lincoln, who was very, very close with Jeb Bush, close with Karl Rove, and has been steadfastly loyal. And that's the key thing, it seems to be, with the Bush family. You are 1,000% loyal. If there is a shred of disloyalty, you're dropped. And Lincoln, in reward for his loyalty, particularly in the 2000 election, where he campaigned zealously to shut down the recount in Miami-Dade, had a lot of influence in Miami-Dade, this is his agenda. And that agenda includes, by the way, you may be aware of something called the Varela Project. A man named Osvaldo Paya, who was just a nominee for a Nobel Peace Prize for trying to bring change to Cuba. Well, there was no mention of the Varela Project at the White House. There was no mention of Osvaldo Paya or Alessandro Sanchez. And the reason being is that the D.S. Ballarts and the people around them, the really, really far right flank in the exile world, they don't want to know about the dissidents working in Cuba because they could be a threat to them later when they plan to go home and, you know, settle themselves and take power.
They don't want anybody who might challenge their own power. This is remarkable. We're talking with Ann Louise Bardock. I want to get into a discussion with you also about the history of George H.W. Bush, the CIA in Cuba, and some more information here from your book, Cuba Confidential, Love and Vengeance in Miami and Havana. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here again to tell you about InPhone. I hate asking people for directions. It's embarrassing. So instead, I call InPhone. And the nice operator at InPhone gives me driving directions, phone numbers, movie times, or restaurant reservations. So cling to your independence like I do. Call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Jesse sent you. Call now. InPhone. How can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
The following conversation is real. It took place on April 12, 2003, between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber.
OnStar Center, this is Orlando. How may I help you?
Hi, my name is Stacey Noble, and someone broke into my back window.
Okay, did you call the police? You're my first phone call.
When you have OnStar, no matter where you go, a live advisor is available to help 24 hours a day.
Okay, what I'll do is contact the police and I'll conference you.
Okay.
Police 911 emergency.
Hi, my name is Orlando. I'm calling from OnStar. I have a subscriber on our line whose vehicle was vandalized. Now, conference her in, that way you can get more information from her.
Thanks a lot.
Hello, Mrs. Noble. I do have police on the line.
Hi, Mrs. Noble. What happened?
Well, I parked the car at the intersection of Ordway.
OnStar is available on the Saturn View, Ion, and L series. To learn more, visit your Saturn retailer or Saturn.com.
Was there anything else I can do for you at this time, Mrs. Noble?
I just love you so much. I can't even believe how many times I've been thankful for OnStar.
If you need any more assistance from us, just go ahead and give us a call.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
OnStar, always there.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program.
with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however, each month. You'd have
I want to see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Ann Louise Bardock, who is the author of Cuba Confidential, Love and Vengeance in Miami and Havana. And Ann Louise, in your book on page 193, you talk about an FBI memo from J. Edgar Hoover to the State Department dated November 29, 1963. Quote, the memo reported that the FBI had briefed Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency, end quote, soon after the assassination of President Kennedy, and that the State Department had some concerns about, quote, some misguided anti-Castro group might capitalize on the present situation and undertake an unauthorized raid against Cuba, believing that the assassination of JFK might herald a change in U.S. policy, which is not true. End quote from the State Department. A few years ago, about 8 years ago, I was doing some research on a book, and I interviewed both Ernesto Oliva and Harry Enrique Ruiz Williams. These two men were the two leaders of the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Uh-huh.
And Harry Williams was in Washington, D.C. on the day that JFK was assassinated. And, in fact, Haynes Johnson quoted him in a Washington Post piece. Haynes Johnson, I think he won a Pulitzer Prize. About a call that Harry got from Bobby Kennedy. And I talked with Harry about that call and some of these other issues. And,
mm-hmm.
and Harry made the point to me that the code name for the Bay of Pigs invasion was Operation Zapata.
Mm-hmm.
And that the two ships that brought the people to the coast at the Bay of Pigs, where Harry got shot up so badly, and he ultimately went back and did the prisoner swap. He negotiated that thing on behalf of JFK with some cash in his back pocket. That those two ships were named the Houston and the Barbara J. And he said, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush was the president of an oil company, Zapata Oil, that had exploration towers around Cuba and that never found any oil but always seemed to make money. Is this consistent with your research?
Yes, that's an old story. It does appear to be... It seems to be quite credible.
Well, Zapata Oil is real. I mean,
the thing is that Zapata Oil, though, was formed before the Bay of Pigs. It wasn't just suddenly it appeared. The first George Bush was in the oil business, in fact, but some years before Bay of Pigs. So it's not like it just sprouted out of nowhere which sometimes these things get thrown together.
The Bay of Pigs was actually organized in the fall of 1960 as an October surprise by Richard Nixon when he was head of the Cuba Working Committee in the White House to kind of throw the election against JFK and got screwed up because of weather. Was that not the case?
Well, I'm not quite sure if that was really the case with Bay of Pigs. I mean, there were plans on the boards to overthrow Castro going back to Eisenhower. In my book,
right.
I quote from the NSA memos with, as Eisenhower's leaving office, he briefs Kennedy, and he tells him that, you know, that the first thing he should do is get rid of Castro, and there's a plan on the boards. And there were lots and lots of plans. So these things go back to Eisenhower because if Eisenhower had stayed in power, there would have been a kind of...
Well, that's what I meant. I mean, Nixon was vice president under Eisenhower.
Yes, that's right.
And he was in charge as vice president. He was in charge of Cuba.
Richard Nixon met with Fidel Castro when Castro came to the United States, and Eisenhower, you know, to kind of blew him off, as it were, when he went to play golf. And he... Mm. Left it to Nixon to meet with Castro, and who decidedly did not like Castro. And so things got worse from there. But things were bad to begin with, and there's a lot of reasons why things got bad. In reference to George Bush Sr., what's very interesting about that part of the book, first of all, you have to give credit to...
And Louise, I have to ask you to hold on for just a second, because we've got a break here, and then I want to hear what's really interesting about George Bush Sr., and but if you can hold on for just one moment, we've got one short break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Ann Louise Bardock, who is the author of Cuba Confidential, Love and Vengeance in Miami and Havana. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Some subway cars follow a route to the bottom of the sea, and the new riders are fish and mollusks. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Tiny sea creatures and fish make homes on rocks and reefs, and people sometimes try to help them out by sinking other things that will serve the same purpose. Old ships and subway cars are just a few kinds of scrap that people deliberately put out to sea to make new homes for marine life. Bill Muir is a national expert on marine pollution with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. He says people once tried to make artificial reefs out of some questionable material. Things like refrigerators ended up damaging natural reefs and not helping the marine life. The government now has guidelines to be sure people treat the seabed as a resource instead of a dump. Muir has led programs to clean and sink things like retired army tanks and subway cars. He says they can create a reef that will attract sea plants and grazing fish.
The fish are actually grazing on it as you would have in a wooded environment where you might have the deer grazing on the nearby foliage in a woods.
Earlier this year, the state of New Jersey started a project to sink as many as 250 old subway cars from New York off its shores. Prior to the sinking, the cars are stripped of all plastic, degradable materials, and grease to avoid contamination of the marine ecosystem. Muir says sunken subway cars often become homes for mussels. Mussels feed by filtering organic material out of the water, and Muir says the mussel beds sometimes improve water quality and clarity at the same time. Muir says artificial reef programs like this are common around the world. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Mom.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Waiting on you, waiting on you, it's about all I do. Another night, another day, I'm waiting on you.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Anne Louise Bardock, the author of Cuba Confidential, Love and Vengeance in Miami and Havana, yeah? And on George Bush Sr., his secret history with Cuba and the CIA, on Jeb Bush, his destruction of the Everglades and pandering to Big Sugar while simultaneously painting himself as environmentally friendly, why Castro jailed 75 writers and dissidents and executed three young men in April of 2003. That one I was surprised, not because I didn't think that Castro would do that kind of thing. He clearly has and would, but that, you know, the PR implications of it. And I was surprised that there wasn't more flashback from it. But what do you think is the main point of all this here, Anne Louise?
Well, there's a lot of domestic politics, almost all domestic politics with our Cuba policy. You know, in regard to George Bush, where your father's involvement with the CIA, this is the issue, is that it appears that his ties with the CIA go way, way back, much farther than 1975, 76, when he becomes the head of the CIA. And most likely they go back to Yale. He's probably right out of the Skull and Bones fraternity. His father, you know, Prescott, of course, was involved. But I'll read you. See, this is what happened. In 1988, The Nation magazine published two articles along with a reproduction of an FBI memo from J. Edgar Hoover. And that was dated November 29th, 1963, and that was right after the assassination of President Kennedy. And basically the memo said, quote, that they had briefed Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency soon after the assassination to gauge the reaction of exiles in Miami, many of whom were deeply resentful about Kennedy. And Hoover's memo stated that George Bush and an officer of the Defense Intelligence Agency had been briefed the day after the assassination because of fears of the State Department about misguided, quote, anti-Castro groups that might want to capitalize on the present situation and undertake an unauthorized raid against Cuba, believing that the assassination of President John F. Kennedy might herald a change in U.S. policy, which is not true, unquote. And what happened is that this reporter for The Nation, and he went to George Bush, and he said, and Bush's office said, oh, that's not him, it's another George Bush. And they gave him the name of some other fellow. And they tracked down this other fellow who had a completely insignificant minor job, and he said, it has nothing at all to do with me. I had nothing to do with any of these issues. And basically, it's fairly clear that George Bush Sr. was involved going back to that period. And most likely, as you pointed out, that Zapata Oil, his company, was probably a CIA asset in that growing Bay of Pigs. But here's the catch on it. When George Bush was confirmed, his confirmation hearings to run the CIA, when asked whether he had previously been involved, he said no. He said he had no.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that is where.
Of course, he would be allowed to say that. I mean, if he was an undercover operative, you wouldn't expect him in public to testify that he had been.
Well, this is where you ties up with the present headlines about the naming of an agent. If it is so sacrosanct to keep the identity of CIA officers secret, which I do think it is, and so much so that in a confirmation hearing to run the agency, you can't tell the truth, then how is it possible then just to dispense with the name for...
The answer to how it's possible is very straightforward, Ann Louise. You're dealing with the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States. I mean, it's in my opinion. Forgive me for my
bluntness.
I'll
leave you to draw the judgments there.
Do you think, just in quick summary, what do you think is the future of Cuba? You've identified, is it Lincoln de Díaz Villar?
Lincoln Díaz Villar definitely is. His ambition is to succeed his former uncle Fidel Castro.
And he's a congressman from Florida.
He's a congressman from Florida, and whose brother was once, his father was once the best friend of Fidel Castro, and there's some very, very tangled family feud and very, very bad blood involved.
Do you think Bush might provoke this? Do you think Bush might provoke this? I mean, he seems to have a great way of whenever Halliburton scandals come out or whatever, you know, suddenly there's a crisis someplace. And a crisis in Cuba, might work really well next year for the elections.
Definitely they're starting to shore up this vote for the 2004 election. And basically the whole policy that was announced on Friday, which is nothing but the old policy, but to intensify it more, is about trying to nail down votes in two counties in which the Díaz Villars and their people have a lot of influence.
I understand that, but if I may interrupt you, my question is a little larger one, and that is, do you think it's possible that this administration might be planning an invasion of Cuba to happen in 2004 that will turn, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about what's going to be the October surprise. You know, the people who think that his father was in charge of the October surprise with the Iranian hostages back in the election with Reagan and Bush, and that Nixon, you know, put together the Bay of Pigs as an October surprise with George Bush Sr.'s help, you know, with Zapata Oil. And so, you know, if that tradition is going to be followed, there'll be an October surprise, some sort of military confrontation someplace in the world. And could it be that this administration is planning on invading Cuba next year?
Well, it'd be very risky because it would bring the wrath and ire down from around the world. But sometimes this administration doesn't seem to care about the wrath and ire. But, yes, do I think it's possible? I would say that if we were not so entangled in Iraq and the Middle East and things were not in such a, you know, a kind of free fall, terrible way that they are right now there, that this certainly would have been on the drawing board. Because I think you have to bear in mind that the people that Bush Jr. has appointed are the very same people who ran Iran-Contra, the very same people who were involved with, some of them were there when during the invasion of Grenada, and some of them were there when there was the decision to go into Panama and take out President Manuel Noriega and bring him out and put him in a Miami jail. So certainly this is an interventionist crowd. And would they like to take out Fidel Castro? You bet. Would they dare? I think at this moment in history, they are so entangled and so worried about having a kind of Vietnam-like problem in the Middle East that they don't, it might be off the drawing boards. I would not be surprised to hear that there is a military plan somewhere tucked away.
On the other hand, this could be the nice, neat little thing that distracts us from the Vietnam-like quagmire. I mean, you know, the Reagan-Bush administration demonstrated that having short, fast wars against small countries in the Caribbean was a very successful way to distract people from scandals that were happening in the Reagan-Bush administration.
Well, you got to take into account the character of Fidel Castro, and you can say a lot of things about Fidel Castro, but he's not stupid. And no one knows military strategy, and no one is smarter and more clever in that regard. He spent his life studying the battles of Napoleon and Machiavelli, and this is a man who will go He will call the bluff. Remember, during the missile crisis, he was ready all the way to go.
Right, but
you really must be aware of the fact that this is a man who's willing to go all the way. I do not think it would be a simple little venture like it was in Grenada. I think it'd be very serious business.
Yeah, although, you know, up until recently, up until the end of the Reagan administration, Fidel Castro had in his hand the nuclear weaponry of the former USSR, and he no longer has that. What's the big stick that he's got to fight us back with now?
He's got 11.5 million people, and it's not in anyone's interest to have a bloodbath down there. We have a big, we have all our allies, Canada, the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Spain, France, England, even Israel. Every country in the world has investments in Cuba. They are not going to be happy about us starting a war there and losing their billions of dollars of investments. We've sort of created this quagmire with this policy of embargo, and everybody in the world has gone in there and started investing. And I don't think we're really in the position at this point to pull off something like that, the great sadness of some of the hardliners in Miami. There's no question that Lincoln Diaz-Balart, who is the key person in Cuba policy today, he is the key person who has the ear of Karl Rove and Jeb Bush. He has previously asked for a naval blockade of Cuba during a previous crisis. There's no question that they want a military intervention in their heart of hearts, but I cannot foresee that happening.
Yeah, okay. Anne Louise Bardock, Cuba Confidential, Love and Vengeance in Miami and Havana. Thank you very much for being with us on the program today.
You bet.
I very much appreciate you joining us. And a fascinating, fascinating insight into what might be going on in that nation. Will Arnold Schwarzenegger explain his meeting in May of 2001 with Kenny Boy Lay? The Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights wants to know, and they have just publicized, this was yesterday, a letter to Schwarzenegger, actually it was Tuesday, excuse me, a letter to Schwarzenegger in which they asked him, they said, this isn't from their letter, but this is a comment, probably a press release, a meeting with the biggest corporate crook in recent memory while he and his firm were in the midst of ripping off the state should not be taken lightly. The Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights wrote, as governor, you must explain, this is from their letter, you must explain to Californians what you were doing at that meeting, and what information Ken Lay shared with you, and how the meeting has influenced your thinking on energy issues. Be really curious to hear from those of you who live in California. Is this thing getting any play out there? This story of Ken Lay and Schwarzenegger having this meeting way back when? You can post messages to our message board. You go to TomHartmann.com, it'll get you over there. You're welcome to call the program, 1-800-TALK-YES. 1-800-825-5937. I'm curious. It's what might come out of that? What could be the future there? Back to the rest of the news. Afghanistan seems to be spinning out of control. It looks like this administration. I am predicting that this administration is in the middle of a rapid exit strategy to get out of Afghanistan before the 2004 elections, because Afghanistan is going down the tubes and Afghanistan does not have oil. And they're just going to cut and run the same way that we did with Afghanistan back after Afghanistan, with our help, fought off the Soviets. And then we backed out. And, of course, the Taliban and the warlords took over. And now the warlords are taking over, have already taken over most of Afghanistan. We have the country just produced the largest opium crop in its entire history, producing enormous amounts of opiates that can be converted into oxycodone for Rush Limbaugh and other fans of such substances. And in Kabul, you've got a situation where in the capital city, where the handpicked, you know, our handpicked guy is just falling apart. The whole thing is, and so large swathes of the country, this BBC says, large swaths of the country are under the control of warlords, where people live under the daily threat of violence. And conditions are only getting worse. according to a charity, Christian Aid, which is on the ground there, in a letter that they wrote to Foreign Secretary Jack Straw. And growing criminality is further compounding the insecurity felt by the Afghan population. And it's just growing criminality. While efforts to create a national army, police force, and judiciary remain in an embryonic stage, the ongoing climate of impunity means that there is no protection for the individual from the arbitrary use of power. In other words, there are people running around with guns, sticking up people, robbery, rape, pillaging. It's the country of Afghanistan is out of control. And we have soldiers there, and we're going to be working. I tell you, we are doing it right now to get them out. In fact, here in the Asia Times, an article by Saeed Salam Shahzad says U.S. explores its Afghanistan exit options. With Afghanistan daily slipping into more anarchy and chaos, United States authorities, aware that they are unlikely to ever bring stability to the country by military means, continue to explore political avenues that ultimately could pave the way for them to withdraw from the country. What are the military avenues? We're meeting with the Taliban. We just let a guy out of jail. Former Taliban foreign minister Mullah Abdul Wakil Mutawakil was released from U.S. custody in the southern Afghan city of Kandahar, where he had been in detention since handing himself over to the U.S. in February. Mutawakil has often been described in the Western media as a more respectable face of the Taliban. The U.S. has been forced to pursue different tactics in Afghanistan as a result of failure their hand-picked guy, Hamid Karzai. Similarly, the carefully chosen, that is to say compliant, governors in the southern provinces have been incapable of restoring order. It's just a mess. So, the Asia Times concludes, the real pillars of power of the Kabul regime, including the Northern Alliance and General Abdul Rashid Dostum, have now clearly marked the boundaries of their interests, and they are at complete odds with those of the United States. So we let this guy out of jail, this former foreign minister of the Taliban, Mutawakil, and he is now expected, with the help from the Pakistanis, to be given a senior position in the local government of Kandahar, the former spiritual headquarters of the Taliban. At the same time, options are being explored to recruit other former powerful Taliban ministers into the central cabinet in key positions, including that of defense. There was just very recently in Kandahar, there was a mass escape of Taliban prisoners.
Got out. You know, we don't know what happened. The prison just kind of sprung open.
And now Al-Qaeda's network in Afghanistan has been weakened, and so the Taliban is coming. Keep in mind, there was a big battle within the Taliban itself before we invaded Afghanistan about whether they should throw out Osama bin Laden or not. And ultimately, they decided to offer to give any Western country except the United States Osama bin Laden in exchange for not being bombed, and we declined. But so there are these multiple factions within the Taliban, and it is coming back in Afghanistan. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
It's the great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly. And if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
We are going to do Rumsfeld now. You know, I talk about doing acid 30 years ago. Rumsfeld must do it daily. Right before he goes out for a press conference, Rummy comes out all acid-headed up and, you know, just stoned on his ass, just completely freaked out.
Oh, hi. I noticed the doorknobs are all crawling around the ceiling. Hello. Ask me nothing. Get these spiders off of me. People are waving things at me. There's stuff jumping out of doors. Ew, Jesus. You know, the fire hose on the wall there, it just rose up like a snake. And you're asking me questions like, I don't know this stuff.
This is the Secretary of Defense, Truth Seeker. It's insane. Do you understand? These people are crazy.
Sell crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the No Spoon Feeding Zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. In the chat room, we were just talking about the boycott. You've got this right-wing maniac on Faux News who is saying we should not buy anything French. And so I just want to take an opportunity, and we have some friends. I mentioned earlier in the hour when we had a caller who had a vineyard in California. We have some friends who their family in France owns a vineyard, and they've been growing organic wines. And, of course, grapes are heavily laced with pesticides, non-organic ones. I think it's the heaviest, most heavily pesticide-covered fruit, and it concentrates in wines. And so if you're into wine, organic wine is the big thing. When this boycott of all things French happened, these people got hit, you know, with about a 20% drop in sales and importing these organic wines. So they're offering free, $10 for shipping, because it does cost money to ship two bottles of wine. But they're offering free pretty good deal, actually. Two bottles of French wine, a bottle of red and a bottle of white, of high-quality French organic wine. And no, this is not a paid advertisement. I just want to blow back against O'Reilly and his boycott. The number for the organic wine company is 1-888 Eco Wine, ECOWINE, 1-888 Eco Wine. Anyhow, the U.S. eyes second tier threats in terror war. Washington, the axis of evil is back in an expanded form. Anticipated congressional action against Syria this week. It'll be interesting to see if we'll get into that some other time. I want to talk about these bizarre boycotts in this country, that country. But anyhow, the Christian Science Monitor has this article about how North Korea, Iran, Syria, Libya, and Cuba are now in the administration's eyes, in quote, as it seeks to keep the nation and the world focused on the dual threats of weapons proliferation and state-sponsored terrorism. Is Cuba next, or is Syria next? Which country is George W. going to invade next year if the economy doesn't improve enough? If he doesn't raise enough money to wipe out the Democrats? We should place bets on it. Maybe this should be our question for the IE America homepage. Come up with a variation of it. Thanks for listening. Our program produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson. Joe down in Atlanta. Engineered by Steph Stryker and Char Jones and Steve Damschroeder in Detroit. Thank you to all. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. Thanks for joining us today. See you tomorrow.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda, I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.